Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Mejlis and author of the Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Religion has been an important part of life in Central Asia for centuries, and it remains so today. However, authorities in the five Central Asian states are using all means at their disposal to control religion in their countries and monitor the activities of various faiths. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, or USIRF, just released its annual report on the situation with religious freedom. The USIRF report recommended the Central Asian states all be designated as either countries of particular concern or as countries the U.S. State Department should add to its special watch list. The report is a good opportunity to take a closer look at the state of religious freedom, or rather lack of religious freedom, in Central Asia. And to discuss all this, I am joined by Molly Bloom, researcher at USIRF, who helped compile the information on the for Central Asia in the recent report, and Felix Corley, editor of Forum 18 News Service, an agency monitoring religious freedom in the former Soviet republics in Eastern Europe, and really one of the leading sources of information on what's happening with religion in Central Asia for many years, for many of us. So thank you both for being on the show. Molly, I'd like to start with you. Can you walk us through generally an overview of what was in the report that had to do with the Central Asian states? What are concerns that they seem to pop up again and again in these countries?
Definitely. Thanks, Bruce, for having me and for highlighting the monitoring and policy recommendations of the commission. So first, I think I want to give a little bit of an overview as to what USIRF is and our mandate, and provide a little bit of context on our annual report and what we're looking for when we're writing these reports. So USIRF is an independent bipartisan U.S. federal government agency, and we're created by the 1998 International Religious Freedom Act. And we are tasked under our authorizing legislation to monitor the right to freedom of religion or belief abroad and make policy recommendations to the president, the secretary of state, and Congress. And our work is led by 9 commissioners who are appointed by either the president or congressional leaders of each political party. And IRFA, or the International Religious Freedom Act, mandates us to release an annual report that highlights the worst religious freedom violators abroad. And the report is sort of segmented out into 2 different categories. We highlight countries that we are recommending for the State Department to designate as countries of particular concern. So these are countries whose governments engage in or tolerate particularly severe violations of religious freedom. And these violations are egregious, ongoing, and systematic. The second group of countries that we consider in this report are countries that we recommend for inclusion on the State Department's special watch list. So these are countries that engage in severe violations of religious freedom. Severe isn't defined under IRFA like particularly severe is. And so we at USIRF interpret severe to mean 2 out of 3 of those previous qualifications that I mentioned. So 2 out of 3 of either. And the violations either have to be egregious, systematic, ongoing, a combination of 2 of those 3. And so like Bruce mentioned, all of the 28 countries that are represented in our annual report this year, 5 are the Central Asian states. We have Tajikistan and Turkmenistan that we're recommending once again for designation as countries of particular concern. And then we're recommending Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and for the first time, Kyrgyzstan for the special watch list. And you'll notice throughout our conversation, and I'm sure Felix will bring up these trends as well, all of these countries are operating off of similar legislation that restrict religious freedom to varying extents and have maybe some variation in their provisions restricting religious practices, but they restrict the sort of framework of legislation restricts religious activities for all religious groups in each of these countries, but particularly we see the targeting of Muslims as a primary issue, and in particular those Muslims who deviate from the state's preferred interpretation of Islam. So I think I'll stop there as a broad overview, and then we can maybe go into specifics about each country as questions pop up.
Okay, thank you. Felix, would just pick that up a little bit with the situation on religious freedom. And, you know, Molly just kind of laid out that the state has kind of got its fingers all over religion. And yet constitutionally, these are secular countries and they're not supposed to have anything to do with religious practices too much. What can you say about state efforts to control religion in Central Asia and legislation that helps them control religion in Central Asia?
Well, every Central Asian state is very different in terms of the societal makeup, you know, its history, its background, its, you know, the general environment within the country and the system. There are many, many common features, and one of them is the government's belief that it should absolutely control everything in the country, everything that happens. So nothing moves without the government wanting to control it. So that includes, you know, the media, trade unions, politics especially, and it includes religion. Religion is or can be a powerful force in societies. It can mobilize people get together, and the government is determined to crack down on this, to make sure that there's nothing that's going to emerge from such communities that could cause it a threat. Now, religion has clearly been in history something that, you know, in the communist period, they were really scared of, say, the Iranian Revolution, where Islam more or less took over the state, Shia Islam, and removed the Shah. And this is something they do not want to happen in their backyards. So all the governments have got pretty tight laws which restrict almost all aspects of religion. And as Molly has rightly said, the community that they're really scared of the most is the Muslim community. It's the biggest community. It's the one that they fear could mobilize the population, and therefore the controls on it. It is really controlled from inside as well as from outside. All other communities, the regimes control them from outside, whereas Islam, they've created in each of these countries a Muslim board, which is basically subjugated to the state. The state controls the appointment of imams, especially the top imams, chief mufti in the country, controls what sermons they give. It controls the literature. It controls everything. So therefore, we've seen the same general patterns in each of the countries, the same type of obsessions in the laws.
Okay, thank you. Molly, if I'm a very religious person, extremely pious, and it's obvious to everyone, what are the authorities going to make out of that, you think?
Yeah, I think it's important to say generally everyone is there's this culture of surveillance in all of these Central Asian countries, but I think it's particularly true if you're outwardly pious, if you're a woman and you wear a hijab, if you're a man and you have a beard, if you're anyone and you're going to the mosque more often than just, you know, for your typical Friday prayers, you can be targeted to more surveillance. There's been, for example, in Kazakhstan, it's presumed there's a case of Anatoly Zernichenko, who was recently sentenced to prison a couple years back for downloading religious materials on his phone. And he is somebody who has been known to go to mosque more often, who wore shorts, who had these traits of a more openly pious Muslim. And he was found police found a reason to sort of surveil him, and then found, you know, the materials, downloaded religious content on his phone, and made that a reason to then put him in prison. And there's instances in Turkmenistan, bringing it back to a CPC recommended country, of women who go to mosque, who wear hijabs, who pray with Islamic prayer beads, of, you know, being pulled aside by police to be interrogated, have their phones searched, have their homes searched. Men who have beards in Turkmenistan and Uzbekistan have had them, you know, forcibly shaved by threat of arrest or imprisonment. And so you really, you know, it's true that there's this, you know, surveillance for all people in these countries, but particularly if you're outwardly or openly seem pious and visibly pious, I think that can make the situation, you know, worse for you.
Okay, thank you. Felix, you know, Central Asia has been everyone always says it's a crossroad of civilizations, and it certainly has been, and that's true of religions. I mean, there's a number of religions that have had roots in Central Asia at one time or another. How tolerant is the government of you know, really all the various faiths, or is it? It's pretty much confined to Russian Orthodox and Hanafi Islam, isn't it?
Well, that's what the government would like to impose because it believes it can control these communities more easily than other communities that are especially out of their control. So rival Muslims, Shia Muslims in Uzbekistan in particular, but also they've had problems in Kazakhstan. Ahmadi Muslims, they've had problems in Kazakhstan and in Kyrgyzstan. We've got the problem with the Ismailis in Badakhshan region of Tajikistan. Muslims who do not want to be subject to state-controlled Muslim boards. And in Kazakhstan as well, ethnic mosques. So you cannot have a mosque that is linked to one ethnicity. So some years ago in the north, in Petropavl, the authorities forcibly had taken over a Tatar mosque, which caters to a local ethnic Tatar community. Azeri mosques as well, have to be very careful. Chechen mosques and so on. And in the south of Kazakhstan, they've particularly been going after ethnic Dungans who like to teach a Quran to their children. And there's been a whole string of fines, with quite large fines, several months' average wages for the people who teach the Quran and Arabic to the children in homes. So, you know, quite a targeted set of situations there against particular Muslim communities. But, I mean, all religious communities are subject to restrictions. So some of the Protestant communities which kind of sprouted in the 1990s, Jehovah's Witnesses, other communities, Baha'is, Hare Krishna devotees, they all have to tread a very fine line. And when they draw the attention of the authorities, then that can make their life difficult. If they keep themselves to themselves and function, if they manage to get registration, they function in a way that the authorities expect them to do with no surprises, they can generally maintain places of worship, but the regimes often do not want new communities of that faith to operate. So, for example, in the Jehovah's Witnesses in Uzbekistan, they've only been allowed one community. They had two registered communities, but some years ago, the community in Fergana was stripped of registration, and they've repeatedly tried to get registration for numerous communities in the country. Tajikistan, Protestant churches were actually told by state officials, we are not going to register any more Protestant communities. So quite open. In Turkmenistan, there are about 12 or 13 non-Muslim registered religious communities, and there seems almost no chance that the regime will allow any other new ones to register or exist, ones that exist without registration, to gain registration.
Okay, thank you. I want to talk a little bit about the role with modern technology, namely the internet and social networks, and what that's done. Because the authorities are always about a step behind technological advances, certainly with the internet, but they catch on pretty quick, and then they start figuring out responses to this. Felix, let me come back to you with this. There seems to be a lot more people that are getting detained, jailed for what they post on the internet. Have you noticed this?
Definitely. Some years ago in Uzbekistan, there was a spate of jailing people for 5 years for having religious materials on their phones. And many of the people who were jailed were actually foreign citizens who were in transit through Uzbekistan. That does seem to have faded. They check people's phones from time to time. It's a standard police measure. They grab someone, they check their phone, because you can always find something in it that you can do them for. I'm just running through the administrative punishments. Last year in Kazakhstan, we managed to find over 200 administrative prosecutions of individuals or religious communities in 2023, and many of those for people who post religious material online or who offer religious literature for sale online. Sometimes there's a website, olx.kz, where people put up, it's like eBay, where people put up old stuff that they want to sell. and people who maybe they're not religious at all. They've got a Bible. Some of them, you know, had a Bible that they inherited from their grandma. One of them was a German language Bible from a grandma, and the person could not speak German and therefore thought, well, I don't need this anymore. I'm going to sell it, and for a fairly small amount. And then they get a fine of 2 months' average wages for offering religious literature online. Many people post things on social media of contact, yeah, Facebook, Instagram, and so on. There are loads and loads of fines for that. So it's one of the biggest sections of the 200 people who got fined last year, biggest chunk of them. And all of them, as far as we could see, there's some of them we don't know the faith, but they all of them were either Muslims or appear to be Muslims. And especially during the COVID times, religious communities began more and more putting services and prayers up online. So far, St. Kyrgyz in Kazakhstan, the regime hasn't moved against Christians who do, or non-Muslims who do this, but they have done this against Muslims. So it seems that there's some discrimination there. Clearly, unless people are inciting violence, or calling for the violation of other people's human rights, then anyone should be allowed to post whatever they like online. But there's huge state attention which is given to this. They're spending a lot of resources, the police, the religious affairs officials, state religious affairs officials, they're spending a lot of time on this. And you'd think with the police, don't they have crimes that they should be investigating?
Yeah, good point. Thank you. Molly, I'm going to give you the same question here, too. I mean, I noticed this, that, you know, in some cases, the countries, you know, they've kind of encouraged people to come online and discuss some of this stuff. I'm thinking Uzbekistan, but not only Uzbekistan, but when people, bloggers, there's religious bloggers, right? And they seem to be getting into trouble all over Central Asia.
Yeah. And I would say Uzbekistan in particular, this is a major issue, people getting in trouble for their online religious expression or activity. We saw just in 2023 alone quite a few cases. We heard about situations where the Committee on Religious Affairs was meddling in the media reporting on Islam. For example, the site KUN.UZ had to cut or change stories that produced on religious matters, supposedly due to pressure from the Committee on Religious Affairs. We also heard about another Islamic site that's pretty popular in Uzbekistan, or was. It had to shut down, azan.az, that focused a lot on Islamic issues. And the owner inexplicitly announced its closure without any sort of explanation. And again, this was sort of attributed to government pressure. And then we also saw these two young men prosecuted for their online religious activity. A court sentenced Sardor Rahmankulov to 5 years in prison on extremism charges for distributing religious songs. He just uploaded a religious song online. There was another similar case of Jahangir Ulug Morodov, who was sentenced to 3 years in prison for posting, again, just a religious song to social media. Both young men were released a few months later, but nonetheless, they were put through the process of sentencing and being placed in prison. And then, Bruce, like you mentioned, bloggers as well have been fined and placed in administrative arrest for publicly commenting online about their religious beliefs. There was an odd situation with a blogger who criticized a shop display on social media. And he was fined. There was another case where somebody criticized that Muslims shouldn't consume certain brands of yogurt because they're haram, and he was sentenced to 15 days of administrative arrest. There was a case of an imam who was fined for discussing Islam on social media without state permission, and that's again state control over imams, throughout the country and throughout the region, and having sort of little liberty to have independent religious expression as a religious leader. And so quite a few cases of online expression being restricted by authorities in Uzbekistan, much like Felix mentioned.
Okay, thank you. And a reminder, we're talking about the situation with religious freedom in Central Asia, and my guests are Felix Corley, editor of Forum 18 News Service, an agency monitoring religious freedom in the former Soviet republics in East Europe, and Ollie Bloom, researcher at USERF, who helped compile the information on Central Asia for the recent report that USERF just released. Thank you both again for being on the program. Let's talk specifically about countries a little bit. And let's start with the bottom of the list, I suppose, in Turkmenistan. Felix, what you don't hear much about religion in Turkmenistan. Just very few reports. What's the situation like there?
Well, I think many of the religious communities have been so crushed that they're really basically existing at a certain level and can't really develop and expand. The Muslim community, there has been this year quite a lot of people attending mosques over Ramadan, and at the end of Ramadan, Eid al-Fitr, there were a lot of people in mosques. So people have not been entirely intimidated. People still prepared to risk going to mosque and showing that they have faith and want to pray, join the community to pray. But Islam is completely controlled by the regime. And as Molly indicated earlier, in young men in particular, if they got beards or look to be devoutly Islamic, or women who wear the headscarf, can be hauled in and be threatened. Sometimes men are forced to drink vodka, which clearly is against Islamic belief, or eat pork. Some of them are forcibly shaved. So, there's all kinds of threats that are issued. And the authorities regularly go around schools warning school children against religious sects, as they call them. And that not only includes people, say, like Jehovah's Witnesses or Protestants that one might imagine, but also small Muslim communities which function outside state control. And earlier this year, ahead of Ramadan, there in Ashgabat, they were warning children not to give alms, zakat, the obligatory Muslim almsgiving, to mosques, but to give the money to schools instead. They say, look, you spend most of your time in schools. They need the money. But in recent years, the numbers of Muslims who are allowed to go on the Hajj or the Umrah has increased from Turkmenistan. Under Niyazov, the former president, but one, in fact, there was only one aeroplane that was allowed to go on the Hajj pilgrimage. So approximately 180 pilgrims, which obviously included, among that number, it included secret police agents. That has now increased quite considerably, but still there are obstructions. There's still the government spies who will go with the pilgrims. So, the other thing is, because the country is so isolated, it means that religious communities can have very little contact with the outside world. Registered non-Muslim communities generally can only invite one or two visitors each year. So if they're a Protestant community, a pastor from Russia or from another country to come to visit the community, and usually they can only stay for up to 5 days. The Russian Orthodox Church, the diocese, is still under the bishop from Vladikavkaz in southern Russia, and he's still only the temporary administrator of the parishes. They've never had a proper diocese, and some people believe that the government will not allow them to have a proper, fully-fledged Orthodox diocese in the country. Religious literature is still under control, and if you are allowed to import books, you have to get them. They're taken off you at the airport, they're sent to the religion committee, and they need to be stamped to say they're okay, and they need permission to import literature. Some non-Muslim communities have been allowed to import, say, Bibles or something, up to about 20 or 30 copies, but it's such a difficult process that many probably don't think it's even worth trying.
Okay, thank you. I also want to mention that Turkmenistan is one of only two countries I can think of in Central Asia where the leader, is actually mentioned in Friday prayers, obviously very glowing terms. Molly, you want to add anything about Turkmenistan?
Yeah, I'll just say one thing on the leader, at least the former president. There was an instance during Ramadan this year where state employees were urged to honor the Arkadag, which is the pet name for the former president of Turkmenistan, by fasting as he would during Ramadan, which was actually sort of contradictory to other restrictions that popped up during that month. But I'll touch upon, I think, Muslim religious prisoners of conscience in Turkmenistan, because there's such little information that comes out of Turkmenistan. But at this point, we know of at least 10 individuals, but the number is likely to be larger, who are serving at least 12 years in prison for their peaceful religious practices in quite a few cases. We have, for anyone who's interested, we have a database on religious prisoners of conscience on our website on userv.gov. So you can find the individual cases of everyone from everyone that we know of who's imprisoned on the basis of their religious belief from Turkmenistan and all five Central Asian states. But in our database, we have at least 10 people in Turkmenistan who are imprisoned for peaceful religious practices like meeting in private to study religion or discuss religion, things of that nature. And this year, we actually received information about a Turkmen who was deported from Russia, Ashire Bakiev, who and Russian authorities worked with Turkmen authorities to get him back to Turkmenistan. And he was sentenced to 23 years in prison immediately arrested upon his return to Turkmenistan for his peaceful religious activities. And we know Bakiev, like many of these religious prisoners of conscience, is being held in Ovadan Depi prison, which is notorious for the maltreatment of prisoners. And we've received reports of people there dying from starvation and torture. And so the situation is pretty dire. Right now, all of the prisoners of conscience that we know of are Muslim. There used to be a pretty sizable group of Jehovah's Witnesses that were imprisoned for their conscientious objection to military service, but they were pardoned a couple years back by the president. But I think Felix really covered the bulk of the situation in Turkmenistan pretty well. And we're just continuing to see these same violations. And like we touched upon, Felix and I both, during Ramadan this year, we saw an increase in restriction, increased surveillance of mosques. There was this ban that was put in place prohibiting those who are under 50 years of age from attending mosques. There was reports of beard shavings, of searches of quote unquote extreme believers. And like I said, people were told to fast in order to honor the Arkadag. There was also instances of students not being able to enter classrooms until they broke their fast in front of security officers. And so the restrictions really, you know, run the gamut.
Wow. Yeah, thanks. And I should mention at this point that Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedov, a.k.a. Arkadag, was never really known as a religious person until very recently, and that's only according to state media in Turkmenistan. I'm going to switch over to Tajikistan, and I'll start with you, Molly. But, you know, this is one of the countries that's really, it's been striking how much they've cracked down on religion. All the governments have done it, but maybe because it was a little looser in Tajikistan for a while after the civil war ended in 1997. Now, it's really been a dramatic situation with religion just in the last less than 10 years. I want to specifically call out with the situation in Gorno-Badakhshan, which Felix talked about just a while ago. Can you tell us more about the situation with religion in Tajikistan? And also, you know, please mention some words about the Pamiris in the east.
Of course. So I think I should start with the legal framework that we're operating under in Tajikistan. We have the religion law, which recognizes the special role of Hanafi Sunni Islam. Like we talked about, this sort of different position for Hanafi Sunni Islam, and not even just that school of Islam, but the state's particular interpretation of Hanafi Sunni Islam. And any religious organization that wants to operate legally within the country must register with the state. And registration requires providing a lot of personal information, including beliefs on education, family, marriage. And then the state has a lot of broad discretion to reject any applications or later revoke them. The state approves all religious materials that are imported or distributed or sold. And actually mosques have particular registration requirements. They have higher, you know, membership thresholds when it comes to getting enough founders together, to register, a mosque, depending on the various, category of mosque. You know, religious education abroad is only allowed after studying in Tajikistan and getting approval, from the government. And there's a restriction on who can go to mosques specifically. So boys under 18 are not allowed to, and women in general are prohibited from going to mosques. So that's sort of the legislative framework that we're working in when we talk about Tajikistan. And so this impacts all religious groups, Muslims and non-Muslims alike. I think I'll start with Jehovah's Witnesses, which is a group that has been banned in Tajikistan since 2007 and outlawed as an extremist organization, which means they're not allowed to legally operate in Tajikistan. And this year, the Supreme Court actually rejected an appeal to reverse that ban. And it was done in a really murky and secretive way. We see the continued harassment of Jehovah's Witnesses, to then find out information about their fellow witnesses, and, you know, fines and temporary detainments for, you know, altogether peaceful religious activity. The government also this year, continued to level extremism accusations against those who criticized the Rahmon administration. And this particularly targeted, the religiously based Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, which has been banned since 2015. And we saw a few cases of transnational repression against folks who are affiliated with the IRPT. So there's a case with Abdullah Shamsiddin, Nizomiddin Nazrudinov, who were both sentenced, brought back to Tajikistan and sentenced to prison for engaging online with IRPT content, basically, and having affiliation with the group. We also see Tajikistan engage in coercive military conscription tactics, and using people's religion to encourage folks to volunteer for the military. We've seen a mosque was closed in Isfara City during Ramadan, and in Vadat City, we even saw a mosque destroyed because not enough men volunteered for the military. There's also, like we see in other countries, this sort of focus on independent Muslims being quote-unquote extremist. And in Tajikistan in particular, there's this accusation that, that everyone is Salafi if they're extremist. And so there was a couple cases this year of folks being imprisoned for their independent religious activity. And these are Muslims. So there's an imam, Muhammadi Muhammarov, who was sentenced to 8 years in prison on extremism charges for teaching Islam to a group of 12 Muslims. And his students actually faced prison sentences as well, but we don't have any details about their names, how long they were put in prison, their official charges, or anything like that. There was another case of a different imam, Imam Abdulhanan Usmanov, who was sentenced to 6 years in prison on charges of participating in a banned extremism organization and obstructing his daughter's education. Actually, authorities found him because he had disrupted a wedding, and so he was later subjected to an investigation, and security services found that from his online activity that he would watch and distribute materials from the quote-unquote Salafi movement, which has been banned in Tajikistan for a few years, and is often, like I mentioned before, used as sort of like a catch-all word for all independent Muslims, much like extremism is used to broadly apply penalties for independent religious activity. Also, to bring it back to Gebal, to Ismaili Shia Muslims, in particular this year, we saw, you know, a further crackdown on their religious activity. We saw authorities continue to try to curtail the influence of their spiritual leader, the Aga Khan, by nationalizing Aga Khan Foundation social service facilities. There's been cases reported of security officials harassing and threatening instructors for teaching about Ismaili Shia Islam in schools, in their typical education courses. Also of note was a January 2023 meeting that authorities held with local elders in the region to announce a few new prohibitions on activities of Ismaili Shia Muslims. So that was a prohibition to study abroad at the Institute of Ismaili Studies in London. Folks were told to stop hanging portraits of the Aga Khan and actually suggested to instead replace their portraits of the Aga Khan with portraits of President Rahmon. And they were told they could no longer hold group prayers in private homes. And this is particularly significant because at this point, there's only one operating prayer house in Gabao, and that's in Korog, the capital of the region. And you can imagine it's not easy to get to for everyone in the region, and it's not practical to have everyone pray in that particular prayer house. I also want to note a presidential decree that came out in 2023, which banned funeral rites for those killed in quote-unquote anti-terrorist operations. And so you can imagine this particularly impacted families of those who were killed in the protests and the violent government crackdown on protests, because they were then now forbidden from, you know, knowing the burial locations of their loved ones or even erecting gravestones. And there's been reports that this has been violently enforced. I know of at least one person who was tortured by local authorities for trying to put her loved one's name on a gravestone. It's a difficult situation in Tajikistan, and we're really seeing this legal framework and authorities' enforcement of the religion law and other similar laws, cracking down on all types of religious activity of all religious groups throughout the country.
If I can jump in, Molly has given a very good summary of the situation there. It's important to note that when individuals are accused of extremism or Salafism or whatever the regime comes up with, there are no fair trials. There's no open process. Lawyers are intimidated. Human rights defenders locally are intimidated. Therefore, it's often impossible to know how true accusations are, but they just feed a perception that religion is dangerous, that the state needs to control them, needs to watch people. And it's basically tarring people with a brush that everything they're doing is potentially legal unless it happens to coincide with what the state wishes. So, there isn't the openness you need. You need open justice if you're able to have fair trials and to see that justice is being done. And in Tajikistan, you do not have that.
So I want to continue with Felix. You've been on the program a couple of times. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, you've been covering Central Asia, among other countries, for many, many years. The campaign against the Pamiris and the followers of the Aga Khan, I really can't compare this to anything that I ever remember seeing before, because you can't remove all the symbols of Islam, even though you might not like one sect of Islamic group, because the basic symbols are the same, the crescent moon, the Quran. But they've been able, the Tajik authorities have actually been able to remove most of the images or the symbols that are associated with the Aga Khan, right? So this is really practically kind of a cultural genocide at that point, isn't it?
Yes, clearly the Aga Khan has a very key spiritual role as the religious leader, as well as the kind of ethnic leader. And therefore, you know, all the visible portraits, you know, there was one on a mountainside at one point, and all the portraits people had in their homes or in centers and so on, they've gradually been stripped away. So it's almost removing all visible signs that the Aga Khan ever had any contact there. He visited several times in the 90s, or quite a few times in the 90s and early 2000s, but he can't go there now. People are afraid to have contact with Ismaili entities outside the country. It's really cracking down not only on the visible symbols of the religious community, but also on expressions of the faith. As Molly indicated, you know, the prayers that Ismaili Muslims want to hold in homes, I mean, these are all banned. These are pretty crucial elements of the faith, and respected leaders have been intimidated into silence. One of them in particular is in jail. As Molly said, you know, when people are killed by the security forces in very disputed circumstances, the fact that people can't even have a respectful burial and a place where people can basically lie in peace and in among their relatives and so on. I mean, burials in Central Asia are very important to the honor and dignity of the families, as well as, you know, the respect for the actual person who's died. So this is really going after something that people are worried about. People want to know that when they die, they'll be buried with respect, their grave will be treated with respect, they'll be among their own people in the cemetery. And it worries people.
Okay, thank you. This is a great discussion, but we are running short on time. So we're going to have to kind of lump Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Uzbekistan together. So I'd like to get your comments on that. We'd talked about bloggers in Uzbekistan. But of course, this situation, it's the same situation in Kazakhstan and even Kyrgyzstan. The internet's monitored. What you say about religion, the authorities do see it, and they will act against you. I'll start with you, Molly. Can you talk about, you know, which of those three countries that I named do you think that the developments with religious freedom are most alarming?
I think they're all alarming. I think we're seeing in Kazakhstan just sort of a stagnancy in terms of the status of religious freedom. I mean, it's been at a low place for quite a few years, and it's remained at that low place. In Uzbekistan, where we've seen a lot of great reforms, but in the past year or so, we've seen a backsliding on those reforms. And in Kyrgyzstan, our new recommendation, we're seeing religious freedom conditions really deteriorate. And so Bruce, would you like me to go into Kyrgyzstan a little bit?
Yeah, please. I also want to get Felix's thoughts on that, too, because Kyrgyzstan has always been an outlier, but it's starting to look more like the rest of them.
Yeah. So Kyrgyzstan is the Kyrgyz government is increasingly enforcing, you know, a long existing set of restrictive legislation regulating religion. And we're seeing peaceful religious practices like online religious expression, collective worship, and the possession of unauthorized religious materials all be penalized. Particularly this year, we saw the targeting of independent Muslims. And so the country maintains a list of extremist organizations, which contains some groups that USERF knows to not incite violence or be violent. And so some of those groups include Hizbet Tahrir and Yakin and Kar. And we've seen multiple instances in the past year or so of members from both groups having their homes searched by security forces and then being called into police stations where they're, you know, then forced to renounce their beliefs on video or in conversations with officials. And on the other end of things, we've saw this mass interdepartmental inspection of Islamic institutions throughout Kyrgyzstan. Buildings were closed both temporarily and permanently for violating various safety standards like building codes, health codes, and the religion law. And these are Islamic institutions that are independent, that maybe aren't registered with the state and have flown under the radar for a while. But I see this mass inspection of institutions as sort of proof that the government is paying more attention to religious activity, particularly of Muslims in Kyrgyzstan, and is really making sure that groups are registered and adhering to the law. And so this was a major development from the past year. And then the situation is similarly poor for non-Muslim groups. There was a raid of a Catholic church, there was a raid of a Protestant church, and foreign churchgoers were fined during those raids. There was closure of several Protestant institutions for building code violations. A Hare Krishna wedding rehearsal was disrupted, and folks had their visas revoked and were sent back home. The host was fined. So generally a wide spat of issues, online activity has actually been penalized with time in prison. There's a case of Aytbek Tinaliyev, who's a Protestant Christian, who was sentenced to 6 months last year for inciting religious enmity for making social media posts that criticized official religious policies and promoted his own Christian beliefs. There was another individual, Artsinbek Abdildayev, who was detained for inciting religious enmity. And he authored social media pages that, according to the government, contained calls for religious hatred. And in these posts, he called himself a new god, a savior, criticized other religions. And he later died in prison under murky circumstances. But Abdildayev was also pretty well known in Kyrgyzstan, and he was a presidential candidate at one point and was pretty famous for his actions during the campaign. And then there was three men who posted a video online, actually criticizing the closure of their mosque, which was one of the mosques that was impacted by the mass inspections that I mentioned earlier. And two of those men were ultimately sentenced to prison. And so Kyrgyzstan is also, cracking down on online religious expression as well, particularly as it pertains to official government policies.
Okay, thank you. And Felix, I'll let you handle those three too. And I apologize. I mean, obviously, each country could have its own podcast dedicated to it in the religious freedom situation. But your thoughts on those three countries?
Yeah, I mean, staying with Kyrgyzstan, well, perhaps just look at, the continuing legal threats of new laws. Governments seem to think that because the laws so far haven't stopped people from practicing their faith as they choose, they need to make them even tighter, despite the fact they already ban unregistered religious practice, they impose religious censorship, they allow plenty of scope for religious communities to be banned or closed down if the regime don't like them. They keep thinking we need to make the laws even tighter. Kyrgyzstan, the state Commission for Religious Affairs, prepared draft laws which would sharply increase controls even more. These have been lurking around for a couple of years, and we just don't know when they might hit Parliament. Clearly, if they do reach Parliament, then they can, they can be tracked and so on. But at the moment, while they're in government corridors, we've got no idea when they might emerge. The government put them out for public consultation at one point, public consultation late last year. Whether they'll actually pay any attention to the comments they got from people, who knows? Kazakhstan, again, we know that they're preparing a tighter religion law, and the government actually admitted in a presentation to parliamentary deputies, a closed presentation, that in the past the government proposed a tighter religion law, and there were protests from the US State Department, the European Union, and so on. Therefore, what they're doing now is to get parliamentary deputies to present a text as though it came from themselves, not from the government, to kind of keep it at arm's length. Now, this draft law, we've seen texts which have become public, but not widely circulated, not officially circulated. But we just don't know when that will hit Parliament as well. Once it's there, we'll be able to see it and be able to track it. But it could arrive tomorrow, or not tomorrow, but next week, or it could never arrive. We just don't know, because the parliaments are under complete state control. The state, parliaments are not freely elected, and they can't unilaterally present new laws. They have to have basically tacit government approval or open government approval. We know that the government must be backing such tighter restrictions. So we're just waiting to see, and religious communities are just left feeling very nervous. What's going to come next? In Kyrgyzstan as well, we have the new foreign agents law, and religious communities are now looking at how it might affect their activity. If they get funding from abroad, they could be caught up in it. And at the moment, the ones we've spoken to just don't know how it might affect them. But it just leaves everyone nervous the whole time.
Okay, thank you. I'll give you both like 2 minutes for final thoughts, but about the direction of freedom of religion. Is there any bright spots, any silver lining, anything we can look forward to, or are we just headed in the wrong direction as far as protection of religious freedom? And I'll start with you, Felix.
Well, I think the regimes are heading in the wrong direction. They want to control the exercise of freedom of religion or belief in an ever tighter way. But the bright spot is that ordinary people continue to choose their faith, practice their faith, share their faith, exercise their faith, want to read religious materials of their choice, and generally try to evade or ignore government restrictions as far as they can. That's a bright spot.
Okay, that is. Thank you. Molly?
I'd have to agree with Felix. I think each of the governments of all of these countries are just finding new ways all the time to further restrict religious freedom. And then we see that, you know, the citizens of all these countries are pretty much fearless about their religious practices. They are aware that they have the right to freedom of religion or belief, and they fully and freely practice their faith, you know, despite the threat of government interference. That's all we can hope for in the face of, you know, intense government crackdowns on religious practices.
Okay, well, thank you. Like I said, this is a discussion we could have for days, actually, on end. But I appreciate you both being on. I'm sure I'm going to have you both back on in the future. Anyone for our audience, if you want to find out more information about the problems with freedom of religion in Central Asia, you can go to the USURF website or Forum 18 and find out more on this. So, but for now, thank you, Molly, and thank you, Felix. And a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Medjlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Medjlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back soon. Bye-bye.